Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 300, episode one of Dirt Daily Zeitgeist.
This is Sparta!
And this is a production of iHeartRadio. That was the first, other than when we mentioned it last week, the first time it has crossed my mind that this is season 300.
This
so, of
is
course,
Sparta.
Yeah, we're going to have special stuff planned.
Jack, this should be the
AKA
most.
Four episodes.
This should be the most significant season because 300 is like the genesis point of everything, I feel.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, it's like our favorite movie. We saw each other in line for the movie 300, shirtless.
Dude, I
just
remember
oiling up.
You greased my back. I remember that's how I met. I was like, hey, bro, you mind getting my back a little bit? And then told me my push-up form was off, and then I went to the bathroom sobbing. But then you came back and you said, hey, buddy, I didn't mean to say it like that. You look great.
Yeah,
you look great.
You look great, man.
We should really try and hit a 90-degree angle if you're going all the way down. Because I was doing a real shallow, like.
But then I told you about negging and how, you know, how
I know
impactful that was and how you could use it to control the world.
And you looked so cool with that boa, like feather boa around your neck, like with your chest out, dude. And then at the time, I remember you introduced me, or you introduced yourself to me as Cryptic. You're like, hey, I'm Cryptic. And I was like, whoa,
what's up,
what?
Man?
Like,
Cryptic,
that was your pickup part. Cryptic O'Friday.
Cryptic is so good. Oh, shit. It's Tuesday, August 15th, 2023.
Yeah. It's National Relaxation Day, National Leathercraft Day, National Lemon Meringue Pie Day, and VJ Day. It's something about the war ending. Cool.
There you go. Cool. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Get Your Shit. Get Your Whole Shit Bit. Hey, hey, get my shit. Get my whole shit bit. That is courtesy of Christy Yamaguchi, Maine, too legit to quit. There were like four words in that AKA and I forgot them for the first half, but that's all right. Thank you for the AKA. Great to see you again, Christy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thrilled to be joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Mr. Miles Gray, AKA crispy wonton rolls filled with avocado, chicken, tomato, and Monterey Jack. Applewood smoked crisp bacon with house-made ranchito. I love these egg rolls. I get them each time. And obviously, that's RHCPK. We're bringing it back, obviously, right to post under the bridge, talking about Jack evoked CPK, and we had to bring up RHCPK again. So thank you. Thank you.
It hits different. Once you've had a long-running bit about RHCPK, going to CPK hits a little different.
Does it?
Yeah, it's good.
Feels good to have heartburn in a place like this.
Well, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by one of the very faces on Mount Zeitmore, a hilarious and brilliant producer, TV writer. You know him from the Yo, Is This Racist podcast. It's Andrew T!
Andrew T!
Solidarity.
Hey,
forever.
Solidarity. Welcome,
I've
man.
I've been having trouble with some of the union songs, man. It's a little, the union song canon got a little white. And then briefly, I was like playing like Communist Party Chinese music on my hype up to this picket line.
Okay,
that
yeah,
got a little weird too. lot of killing motherfuckers in those songs.
Wow. You could sing like Bella Ciao, you know, there's like that one good old yarn from the Italians. That anti-fascist anthem.
You know what? Yeah, there's a bunch of that, you know, and there's probably a bunch of stuff in Spanish that's my fault that I went to Chinese communism.
Hey, you go with what you know first, you know.
So is everybody up there singing Rich Men North of Richmond? The Oliver.
Yeah, that was more of a beginning of the strike thing. I think that was when we were all like trying to be serious. I think what it was we were trying to impress the Teamsters. Like, we're cool.
Right.
We're
right,
down.
Right.
They're like,
and now it's nice now try. It's just kind of
now you've all thrown loosey. Out your backs, just picking up the signs. And
oh my God. It's been a good strike. Haven't seen you guys in a minute, but you know, strike it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we wanted to have you on, because just it's constantly changing. And I think also our understanding of the industry, I think, especially for like people outside of California, outside of LA, have like a very a perspective on what's happening that is not fully formed. And I think, you know, the purpose of today is to really like roll our sleeves up, give some perspective and talk about like what's at stake here truly, because we definitely got a good intro when Adam Conover came on. And now that like things are slowly developing, we know a little bit more, we kind of wanted to come back because this affects like 80% of our listeners' favorite guests. Like, most of y'all don't realize all the comedians that we have on, a lot of them have spent time in writers' rooms, because that's they ain't, like Marcella said, she's like, it ain't happening, you're not getting it from stand up. So I get why all the homies end up going to write, because that's a way to carve out a life for yourself. So, anyway, looking forward to talking about
it. I get it. You guys have eaten at California Pizza Kitchen. You think you understand what this strike is all about.
Yeah. I mean,
you've had In-N-Out once, now, right? You get it.
You got AMC PK, right? You could mesh those
AMC
up.
PK. Oh, yeah, we should. Yeah. AMC PK. Yeah. I don't know. We'll work on it.
Are you sounding that out just to make sure?
See where the RH comes in. But.
Oh.
Yeah. That's tough. That's tougher.
It's a tough one.
AMRCPK.
There we go.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Doesn't
we need
work.
A bigger
it's
room?
Fine.
We need a bigger room to
workshop
that.
Yeah, you know what? If we had enough minds to do this, we could
give you the proper product. Sorry about that.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Andrew, before we get to all the strike stuff, we do like to get to know our guests a little bit better and ask you, what is something from your search history?
All right, this is going to be. I think this one was okay, and it didn't really give me the results I was looking for exactly, but I searched earlier this week, is Splinter a weeb in the new TMNT movie? because there are two ways you can go with classical depictions of Splinter.
Right.
One is essentially like a actual Japanese rat, exactly. Or sometimes a Japanese person who's been ratified.
Mm.
Right.
Ratatouille. And then I believe the newish depictions are he's just like a weeb, essentially, just a New Yorker who loves Japanese culture so much he decided.
He's not Hamato Yoshi anymore?
I don't think he was named in the current one, but no.
What's his accent like? What's his voice like?
Well, okay, so this is where it gets even weirder. So I did not realize what this was until I didn't really get a satisfactory answer, and I just went down that rabbit hole of sometimes he's a weeb. but even weirder, and I guess I probably could have known this if I'd paid more attention to the advertising, he's voiced by Jackie Chan. And
what?
Like, fake? Pretty clearly, so they split the difference. He's an Asian rat, but he's still a weeb.
How you do that?
They basically are just like, he just liked ninja shit, like the way American, you know, well-meaning kind of racist
drives
dummies,
a Trans Am.
like ninja shit. He's like, I don't know, we needed a way to learn how to fight, and ninjas are cool.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of like Wu-Tang adjacent, like the RZA.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just watching Kung Fu movies. Like, that's how
it basically is exactly that.
So it's the same way Wu-Tang got their whole shit.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. This shit really, was on. We liked it.
But it's like, he is Asian. He's definitely not Japanese.
Right.
There's no point played for Japanese. It's very like, I'm choosing not to think it through too hard because I really like the movie.
Right, yeah. Right.
I haven't seen it, but I will be taking my kids.
Oh my, dude, so many of my friends are like, yo, you should go see it. It's not bad, actually. Because yeah. A few of my friends are doing the millennial thing or like millennial parent. We're like, hey, I'll take my kids to see some shit I fucking know about. And they're like, I don't regret it. Or that was the main thrust. It wasn't like, it wasn't bad. I don't regret it.
I'll throw this out there. And maybe this is, I'm childless but old, mm-hmm. so I'm both a teenager and basically a dad. Uh-huh. It is maybe my favorite movie since Everything Everywhere All at Once.
It is so
good to me specifically.
Wow. Okay. That's a heavy fucking stamp of approval out here.
I genuinely walked out. I was like, I watched it with a group of fellow TV writers on strike because mm-hmm. we were like, fuck it, we'll go after the picket line in the middle of the day. My friend turned to me like 4 minutes in and was like, I think this is the most beautiful movie I've ever seen.
Just one tear coming down. It's like,
it's so
the animation
good.
Looks really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. The animation.
Looks yeah. So the good. Animation looks amazing. It's like perfectly like dudes our age New York, kind of like that kind of like slightly backpackery vibe,
mm-hmm. okay.
plus real teenage shit, plus real like dad shit. It's incredible.
Wow.
It's I'm not saying it is the best movie. I'm just saying to me it is my favorite movie.
And I love
it. It's like designed for me, but I suspect you fellows might find many of the same traits very appealing.
Hey, you know, be on this Zoom call if you have daddy issues. Okay, great. great.
You liked it that so much despite the fact that Splinter admits that his entry point to ninja culture was these six samurai swords that he has framed next to his bookshelf.
But I think on the balance, that's better than the other version.
Right.
Like,
The version of like, Japan I was sold as a child. I was like, this ain't, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. Just the shit where whatever version of him being a quote unquote actual ninja is fucking wild.
Right.
So I think of the lesser of two evils choices, or I do think this kind of splits the difference because they're like, it's better if he's Asian, but it's better if he's not Japanese.
Right.
I'm like choosing not to unpack any of this because I did like,
because you liked it so much. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, that's me being a coward.
Yeah.
But yeah, he is both Asian and a weeb. The rare intersection.
Shredder. Oroku Saki still is, does they have that backstory with him?
I'm gonna no spoilers this.
Okay, that's
and
fine.
Say don't worry about it.
Okay, cool. Thank you. I like that. Yeah, don't worry about that part. I remember always as a kid, I was like, that's not a real Japanese name. It always bugged me as a kid. I'm like, okay, Hamato Yoshi. Like, okay, that works.
Yeah, it's just Saki? One of those like. It's really, you know, it's based on a thing that is like sort of like well-meaning, and it was a parody anyway, but it definitely, you know, it's this like American take on Japanese-ness that is bad
right.
at its heart, like no matter how much they liked the idea of these turtles or right. these ninjas in general. So it's very hard to imagine a good version where they're Japanese, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that right? Like, is that true? I don't know. Yeah, that's where I'm sitting right
they're
now.
They're not, because you want it to be like, because they're like an analog for people who got like Asian culture through the media or something.
In the early 90s.
Ends up being these fucking turtles, bro. Sorry, these turtles fuck with ninjutsu, okay? Not ninjutsu, okay?
Yeah.
But anyway, that'll be me being annoying to my kid as we watch. Don't ignore that part.
Yeah, just say it real. Just lead over.
The like, ooze does not little... exist, no matter how much you wanted it to.
Here's a little list. No, the movies are back for now. And
yeah.
In a big
I was shocked. I had a great cinema week, actually. I'm just going to start, since we're off on a tangent. I watched... But no, okay, I'll make this my underrated anyway, which okay. is just like the fucking, like, yeah, the big movies are whatever. They're, you know, they're good. People like them. This has been, I watched Talk to Me, the horror movie, the Australian horror movie that should have been called Talk to the Hand, but that's not my problem.
It's about a hand, though. Yeah, right.
Yeah, they find a cursed hand, and it's like, come on, guys. and I also watched a movie that I think you guys would like a lot called The First Slam Dunk, which was like the feature of an anime called Slam Dunk.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a high school like basketball championship in Japan. And it is, I'm not like a basketball head the way you guys are. So maybe this is like more prevalent in the media. And I had never watched the anime TV show.
Right.
However, it had like, and also this should have been obvious, but they basically, because it's animated, they really take advantage of the fact that they don't have to use the standard camera angles that you experience basketball from, like, you know, the game shit.
Right.
So there's, I might be mistaken by this, about the specifics of this, but I'm trying to remember exactly. There's like one shot near the, I guess it must be, there's a jump ball in the second half, and the camera basically is in the perspective of the ball. And it's like fucking great. Oh,
like it's going up and then like yeah. you see them like try and go up for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so gorgeous. And but there's a lot of like first person stuff that like, you know, you kind of can experience, but like there's a lot of it. And like the basketball, at least to my eye, is played like very real. Like it looks like it's almost like rotoscoped from basketball players, maybe. Or like I don't even know how you make this fucking animation.
Right.
That's so cool.
Yeah,
I highly recommend.
I actually feels have like a,
up y'all alley.
I have a Sakuragi Shohoku jersey. Like that's because yeah. back in the because like Slam Dunk was also like the like sort of injection point for sneaker culture in Japan too, because that yeah. like the guy who Inoue, the guy who started it, was a huge sneakerhead, and like when those early like mangas that he made of it. You're like, oh shit, this is wearing Jordan 3s. He's wearing Jordan 6s. Like the amount of detail that went into their sneakers was like fucking next level. So I was drawn in from that too as a kid too.
Don't quote me on this because I think it's like one of those things where like most of the brands are like kind of that anime style, like kind of fake, like analogs. Right. There's like Green Mart or whatever, except for the Jordans look to my eye like perfect.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, we're not fucking around with that.
Oh, I mean, everything else is like a little fake thing.
Like there is there's a Jordan 6, like an official Slam Dunk Jordan collab because of the, you know, just the how deep that relationship.
It's very good. The movie is very good. It is also like a lot of like teenagers to parents thing. So maybe that's like a little bit of a theme. Actually, so is Talk to Me. That's maybe I should have had kids.
You saw those three films instead. It seems like
they kind of it's a very good movie. It does not have a wide theatrical run, but if you're in Los Angeles, I believe it's playing at the Edwards in Alhambra, which I'm unclear why that is also.
But, oh, yeah. I know that one. Yeah, okay.
It's right by, even though it's in a heart of some of the best Chinese food in Southern California, it's also next to a burger place I like a lot called Grilla Mall. So,
yeah.
Grilla Mall?
Started off as a truck.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
It's pretty good.
It's an aggressive name for a burger place.
Dude, they had one that's like the bread was grilled cheeses.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. That's the what brought me out there the first time.
Yeah.
Listen, it's a rough time out there, and probably this is not the weather for that kind of food, but
yeah, you do what you got to.
What is what's something you think is overrated?
That's a segue to my overrated, which is the thing that this strike has taught me is being comfortable, mad overrated. I don't give a fuck anymore. I'm just like slightly warm, a little sweaty. It's like, you know, because of so-called climate change, LA is like humid now, which I genuinely, that was on my list of when I moved here. It's like, at least it's not humid.
Yeah.
Now we're humid.
And crazy. We have mosquitoes, like crazy mosquitoes.
Yeah. But I think I just, my brain, the part of my brain that gives a fuck about being comfortable really got shut off somewhere around like day 20 of the strike. So I've been very like, fuck it.
Yeah.
I don't care anymore. I went from what are the most comfortable shoes to who cares?
Right. Wow. Just out there barefoot
wearing the pump.
I went for a pair of Tevas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I've been doing Tevas. Occasionally though, I'll just go they're not like walk that far on concrete comfy.
Oh, they're not. Okay.
They're walking around a cruise ship comfortable.
Yeah, they're more like, you know, a light walk in the woods, and or I don't know. I just don't care anymore. Which is because I used to be a person that was so like couldn't handle any discomfort. And now and I'm sure I'm not that good, but for me, I'm
right. Perfect. Well, I'm sure part of that too is like you're now your motivations are different. Whereas before, it's like fine if I got to go out there and be out there, then to be comfortably versus like okay, so you're trying to fucking wear me down? Fuck you.
Yeah,
I am become death.
I'm just I've been ground down to the little like nub. I'm like the seed in the middle of the plum, and you know what the fuck are you gonna do to me? I don't care.
There you go. That's why I take an ice bath every morning. You know?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I do feel like I need something, like I need to do something uncomfortable early in my day or else. Not an ice bath, but like, or else I will just like retreat into like, I don't know. Because I'm a very like interior person. And so like I need to like get out of my body.
Wait, go on. This kind of resonates with me. What do you mean? Like, because I feel the same way. So you try and push yourself to do something. Like, what do you mean? Like, is that when you just like exercise or something like that? Or
exercise.
I lay on a fucking bed of needles.
I'll jump in the pool when it's cold enough. Like, just get going. Do something that's uncomfortable and like that is movement. Because otherwise, otherwise I just will be comfortable inside my body in a way that like then, I don't know, it fucks me up. It just leaves me sort of in a little cocoon. So I've been trying to focus on just being more comfortable with discomfort, like as a general.
Yeah.
Rule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, I know you guys have actual human beings you're responsible for in a more important way, but that's a little bit what having a dog, like an old dog, too. It's just like, I got to get the fuck up because like she got to walk.
Yeah.
Like, and it doesn't matter, like however uncomfortable it is. Cleaning up whatever mess she makes if I don't get her walking time is much worse. So.
Yeah, right.
This thing's about to go off. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, it creates like this incentive of like, fuck. Good. Great. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah. My baby can't even walk yet. So it's like,
yeah.
I think it's probably easier than having a dog actually, because you don't have to walk
for now.
Yeah. I guess so. For now, in my very narrow perspective. Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and say a lot easier.
You guys are going to have real annoying LA. I guess you were already a real annoying LA kid.
Yeah, yo, hell yeah.
The
cool ones come from the Valley, you know, like Molly Lambert, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We have like that cynicism of growing up here that we're not like West Side kids who are like on some fucking shit. Like everything's okay and I have so much money kind of thing. We're like, San Fernando Valley, still... a little bit different.
Right. Because from when you grow up there, it's like, you know, everyone is a clown, so you're not scared of them, but you're also not like, you still got that edge to you.
Yeah. And also, you're not impressed by that. Don't impress me much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Thank you.
Saying that all the time.
I'm going to test
don't that. Impress me much. Yeah. I feel like when you think about like why there are so many Canadian comedians early on, like one of the best explanations I read was that like they have a lot of the same shit as our culture. They get like a lot of what the same culture that we view like incoming, but they're like at enough of a distance that like they view it through a refracted lens. I feel like you got that with the Valley too. That's where we get Molly Lambert and Paul Thomas Anderson.
That's what we call it. We call it the Canada of LA County.
That's right. And they appreciate it and they love it. And
I feel a connection to the people of New Jersey in that.
Yes. Sense.
Where like, where like the people, like where again, the West Side, Hollywood, LA people thumb their noses at the people from the Valley.
Bridge so we're and like, tunnel, fuck bro. Y'all.
We got our own shit over here. That's why when people, they're like, the bridge and tunnel, fuck. I'm like, I see you.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll talk about the strike. We'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Before we get into the strike, real quick, on the subject of that we were talking about.
Okay, which thing? Which topic?
So I just did the Wire podcast with Matt Lieb.
Yeah, and yeah.
It was the episode after Stringer Bell's untimely demise, and they go into his apartment, and He has samurai swords in frames on the wall. And I was like, I definitely, at the time when it came out, and then like McNulty like takes Adam Smith's like, you know, first book, whatever the fuck, the like book that it invented modern economics, like off his thing, and is like, who the hell was I chasing? And I at the time was like, damn, Stringer Bell is so tight, bro. There's like a water feature in his apartment and shit. But it made me wonder, like, did the writers of The Wire, were they like, this is tight, people are going to recognize how tight this dude is? Or were they like, this is kind of funny, like he is basically like a finance bro,
like a hustle culture,
yeah,
like, hustle rise culture and grind.
That's right. Yeah.
Or that like he just knew what he liked, you know. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. He was so secure. He's like, yeah, I'm a samurai sword type dude.
Yeah.
Fuck with
yeah
him. Yeah. I just wish there was a scene with him. It sucks as a reveal though,
right?
Because I would have loved to see Stringer Bell maneuvering some fucking katana or some shit, seeing what the fuck you could
just
do.
Like
with
a
that.
Dark room, like in a in a robe, just like doing yeah. some oh shit like by God, himself. Silk but rope. He's like not that good at it.
Yeah. Or he's got Blade on the big screen and he's like just doing yeah. it along to the movies.
His wall like, has like cuts in it and shit.
So many times he's like, yeah.
It's just all copies of Ghost Dog on your DVD thing here. Yeah. That's the only movie that matters.
Yeah.
Oh, you big right. Jim Jarmusch fan? Who?
Who? What are you talking about? All right. Let's get into the strike.
All right.
You had a recent tweet about how this, like, the thing that's different this time, like, the studios, their whole stance is
yes,
very predictable. Just, oh, they're going to be assholes in this very predictable way.
Yeah.
But that there seems like there's, like, the thing that's been surprising is the level of solidarity.
Yeah.
On the strike side. Like, what have you seen there? Like, what would...
So...
Yeah.
Yeah. I was not in the union in 2008, but I actually was weirdly... That was when some of my friends had started getting their first TV jobs, and I was actually working at Comedy Central, so I was, like, occasionally having to cross a picket line in New York, which was, like, fucking horrible. But... Right. So from what I remember of those days, slash just like what people have been saying, I guess like to back up too, like my, the reason I tweeted that was basically the AMPTP, who are the motion picture television producers, the studios, not really
the studios,
actual producers are not happy that producer is in that title.
Right.
Actual producer are closer to the concerns of the workers. But this was off of them at literally like 100 days and change asking seriously to come back to the negotiating table, which is exactly what happened. Essentially, like last strike went just over 100 days. The reason that sort of like the like conventional wisdom is because that's when they can start canceling some overall deals. I mean, they can't, they have canceled some or paused some, but basically the conventional wisdom goes, that's when they can get stuff off their books, like deals they want to get out of. And it appears that they have basically that. And the reason that's conventional wisdom is because that's the first time the studios like get something out of going, forcing us to go on strike. They get to recoup a little bit of money. And thus, after this, it's all sort of diminishing returns for them. There's no reason, unless they want to just pack it up on the entertainment industry. There's no reason for them to keep the strike going any longer. So that was like utterly predictable. The other thing that was utterly predictable was that DGA would take a, you know, I know there are directors who are happy with the deal they got, but I think most people understand that they got a not that great deal and they did it in a way to lessen solidarity from the other guilds. You know, by agreeing to a thing that one, I feel like I'm just talking, so, you know, jump in, whatever. But like they took a deal where they didn't get streaming residuals, I believe, which has been one of our main points. Essentially, they kind of, we knew they would like stab everyone else in the back, and they did. Mm. You know, the other thing they could have done, which is what our leadership appears to be asking for, is the right for us to stand in solidarity with SAG, the actors, even after our contract is ratified. So that basically is what the Teamsters have, and I believe IATSE have some version of this too. IATSE are the crew people on the... There are many things, but right. As far as Hollywood goes, they're
the crew people.
So, yeah. So you know, I guess what I'm saying is, like, at every stage, if it could have gone one way or the other, it has been more in the case of on the side of solidarity. We, the writers, have been more in solidarity with each other, save for a few, like, high-profile, mostly white guys talking about how they don't give a shit about the union, right. showrunner types. But, you know, compared to last time when apparently there were just like deep divisions evident immediately. And this is also like sort of, I don't know if it was certainly pre-wide adoption of Twitter. I'm not going to look up when Twitter started. It was 2007, 2008.
Right,
so
yeah.
There was probably some kind of.
It really hit the scene stuff. 2009, I feel like, is when effectively like when we really started being like, hey, that's how you can follow food trucks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was when Michael Jackson passed away. That was like
June 2009.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like so a culture where we can all communicate better. So for those things, and then unexpectedly at the beginning, or unexpected at least to me, a rank and file member of the guild, the Teamsters announced they would stand in solidarity with us, which allowed us to shut down productions much earlier because, you know, Teamsters have negotiated into their contract a right not to cross a picket line, which is a legal right that has to be fought for. So yeah, they would, I mean, I remember in the first and second week of the strike, I was out at fucking 4 a.m. at Paramount, and it was kind of like this magical thing where it's like two people can constitute a picket line. And so it was just two people at each gate and trucks were turning around. They were not making their deliveries, and Teamsters were very like, you know, I was going to say kindly, but it's not really kindness, but they were, you know, losing work to stand in solidarity with us.
Right.
And that was, you know, amazing. And then individual IATSE members had a little more latitude. And of course, you know, you don't begrudge anyone their need to make their day's money. But there were IATSE members who also didn't cross the line. And that's how we got production shut down, as far as I understand, much earlier than last strike.
Right.
Because people were more on our side than we thought. And then when SAG came up for their contract negotiation, you know, conventional wisdom was sort of just like, they're probably going to take a not great deal after DGA. It did even seem like that's how things were going. I speak with no insider information, like from the outside of SAG, you know. It seemed like they were making all the moves to just settle for whatever. And they, you know, they were given they released their deal points the same way the WJ board did. And it was preposterous. It was disgusting. There were things like the studios were proposing scanning background actors and simply owning their likeness forever in a digital form. And so for that reason, coupled with, I believe, like, you know, there was like an open letter signed by a bunch of A-listers to SAG leadership that was like, do not take a fucking bad deal. And it did appear to work because the tenor of the conversation from SAG communication changed drastically after that. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of rumors about what they were really trying to do, but the fucking week after, fucking Fran Drescher is out there being like, you know, fuck you.
Right. Yeah. After kicking it with Kim Kardashian. Right.
Like, yeah. It's one of those things where you're like, you know, it's sort of unclear how they arrived at that position, but they're indisputably there. They're you know, doing some things that I personally maybe quibble with strategically. But the fact is, there are fucking, you know, 160 some thousand actors like out there. They're on the picket line. There have been a little bit of growing pains with just like swelling the strike by 11 times. But, you know, just basic logistics. But it is like, It literally is some like real cavalry shit. Like, the actors are here. And you know, that's all actors, you know, I imagine want. They're the heroes. So good for them.
They look great
Oh, good Lord.
But I mean, so you're not surprised by anything you're seeing from them. I don't think anyone who's been paying attention to corporations and these corporations in particular are surprised. They definitely seem surprised by...
Yes.
Like the front that they're getting, like the united front, the like lack of public support seems to really have them being like, why does everybody think I'm the bad guy? Like Zaslav and Iger seem to be having I bet they're on the phone every night just talking to each other.
They'd be like,
what is happening?
They genuinely thought, I think because it worked well in 2008, they genuinely thought they could like bully bluster and like sow discord among the union members. I think, again, social media has been a big help in like eliminating some of that. But also, here's my pet theory, which is like they, you kind of forget the peer group these fuckers run in. Yes. But you have to kind of remember that to them, Ted Sarandos is like their cool hacker nephew. So like Ted Sarandos, I'm sure in those
early head of Netflix.
Head of Netflix. Yeah. You know, and a tech guy, I'm sure he's you know, but it's still like a dozen decrepit, mostly white men, like billionaires, like completely out of touch. So to them, like Ted Sarandos is the equivalent of your like Zoomer showing you, no, this is better than TikTok.
Right. Right.
Like,
yeah. This is how you watch that pay-per-view fight on Twitter, Grandpa.
What?
Yeah. So he's like their, you know, and fucking Reed Hastings or whatever, all the Netflix tech guys, I'm sure are like to these old media billionaires are like, these guys, you know, if there's one thing these guys know, it's digital. They know the internet, and they say we're going to win. They say the people are going to be on our side. And I think they just believe them.
Yeah.
I just don't think they have anyone in their circle who's like, no, you guys are villainous clowns. Like,
maybe
there's like a communications like officer, you know, if you're the
they haven't arrived at the are we the baddies moment yet.
Yeah.
I
think they're on their way.
They do have that one billionaire who owns the jewelry company who...
Cartier?
Is Cartier, the Cartier billionaire owner who's losing sleep. And they're like, what the fuck's going on with him? Like, he needs to dial in
what
his meds.
What a loser.
Right. Yeah.
What's crazy is they actually need a cousin Greg. Like, they just need someone to be like, hey, I don't think this is working.
Well, right. Fuck off, Greg. If I were to posit this theory... to the council, as it were, people are not on our side. But I think it's also important, right, and especially talking about the solidarity, right, because the last time there was a dual strike was in 1960. And this is the last time the WGA and the writers went on strike. And it's really instructive to, like, really to learn about just what the history of labor negotiations in Hollywood have been like, because it's been a fucking exploitative cash grab from the beginning. And in 1960, many people, you hear a lot, like, actually, Ronald Reagan played a huge part because he was SAG president. He actually had two stints as SAG president, one in the late 40s and early 50s. And then again, he came back for this strike in 1960. And a lot of articles have like heavily sanitized his actions as like SAG president, saying that, like, he had the overwhelming of SAG members when he agreed to this new deal, and which is true because people wanted to get back to work. But the other thing was, and that, like, without him, there wouldn't be a pension fund for actors. So we have to thank him for that. But if you look closely, you see a story of a fucking guy that was just self-dealing and could give a fuck less about his fellow workers. So after World War II, right, people just stopped going to the movies like they used to. And the decline was noticeable. So the studios decided to go in big on this new technology called broadcast television. And decided...
That was because TV became a thing. they were like, what the fuck?
The heck? Okay, fine. Well, what are we going to do to make money? Well, they decided to license their films for broadcast and sell them to all these TV stations. And that's how they're making money. But this move brought, you know, seminal films into American homes and people were engaging with motion pictures again. But what about that money? A lot of people are like, hold on, man, I'm in this movie. Where the fuck is my check? Ah, well, you see, all of these films were only making money for the studios and not a single cent was going to the people that wrote or starred in them at all. It was only benefiting the studios. So they wanted to strike, get their money that was owed to them. And Reagan returned as SAG president for this, and he sorted out a deal in 5 weeks. Really easy, really easy. Here's another thing we don't realize is the writers, they were on strike before the actors, and they were on strike for 21 weeks in 1960 because they were unwilling to take these like bullshit deals that were, they're like, no, we want a percentage. We need you to articulate 5%. Like there's like real math involved with what the writers were fighting for. So they got, you know, we come back. Reagan's like, yeah, well, I've got this deal for you if you want to check it out. And basically, the actors would receive residuals only for films beginning production after basically starting from 1960 onward when they started striking. Like, all right, y'all get residuals for the shit y'all make now. And everyone's like, well, what about the other shit? What about from 1960 to shit at least 1948? Well, basically, since they weren't paying residuals on that, they said, okay, we'll cut y'all a check for $2.65 million for a pension fund.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, great. If you look at the time, everyone is saying they wanted at least $4 million for this fund. That's what they're like. All right, if you want to do that, like, you need to meet us at this $4 million mark. They got away with that shit, too. So essentially, no money right now, except in the form of a pension fund is what the actors got then. all because of Ronald Reagan. And you're probably thinking about, well, the other part is, well, what about movies before 1948? Like shit like Gone with the Wind, Wizard of Oz, Citizen Kane. What about those deals? Well, here's where Reagan comes back into the story. He was SAG president between 1947 and 1952, and he forfeited royalties on films made before 1948 in exchange for the promise of talking about negotiating over royalties for films made after 1951.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, fuck that. We don't need to see anything before 1948.
Well, this affects me too. But like his movies that he's like that are affected by it are like sleepover parties with orangutans and shit.
Yeah,
like
bedtime for Bonzo, I think is what you're talking about. Yeah, exactly. So he basically left all that money on the table and was just saying, all right, well, let's negotiate for stuff from 51 onward. That and it was because of that move that precipitated the fucking dual strike in 1960. Because Ronald Reagan, again, was like, hey, whatever y'all want, okay, whatever is fine.
Yeah.
Apart from, like, a few exceptions, right? So, again, many of these actors felt so betrayed by Ronald Reagan. We're like, we created the industry for these people to be in, and you've left us fucking out to dry. And so, again, the only thing that a lot of these people got after 1960 was a pension fund. And this is where you get to see the Reaganness of it all. Like, you're like, why would Ronald Reagan do this? It's like, well, he knew he wasn't going to make money off royalties. He was looking at bigger shit. So an interesting dimension is his agent was a man named Lou Wasserman, who is the president of MCA, which is like a, you know, they do music, film, television, whatever at the time. After the strike, when Reagan got them to agree to that shitty deal, he left his positions at SAG and took a lucrative production deal with MCA like 2 months after. Like if we had Twitter, people would have been like, oh, that's what the fuck is going on.
And it's crazy. It's like when the plot twist in episode 9 of Star Wars is like the bad guy's Emperor Palpatine again. It's like, oh, it's always the same motherfucker. That's all you guys got.
Wait,
it's
him?
Like, Reagan killed unions at the beginning of the 80s. He's like fucking everybody over in the 50s and 60s. It's like,
hey, maybe Reagan just was that awful dude the whole time. It's so weird how like that. Yeah, that he needs to be lionized from time to time, like even by people who really should fucking know better.
Like, 100%. Like, tear down every single myth about Ronald Reagan. I think there's a book called Tear Down This Myth.
My Ass.
Was it Tear Off My Balls? Was
that Mr. Gorbachev?
Tear Off My Balls. So, anyway, the other things that are wild, too, because this guy was so power hungry. He was willing to do anything, right? Including being a fucking informant to the FBI.
Yeah.
And he gave testimony in 1947 when he was first, like, entering the SAG leadership about striking Hollywood workers being the byproduct of subversive elements, aka communists. And he regularly fed the FBI information on people he even personally just suspected of being a communist with very little evidence, if anything. Yeah. That
the bad guys
people's
won.
Careers.
So much of the 20th century, just the bad guys won.
Exactly. And so if you think about it, it's like this was all... It can all boil back to like these very early conversations where the norm was always going to be, take this like shit deal with the vague promises of something better down the road. And we'll just kick the can down the road because at the end of the day, we want to hoover up as much of this money as possible. And just one last thing about it, which is wild, is if you think about like all of the stuff pre-1948 and shit like that. So like people like, you know, Ted Turner bought the film libraries of like RKO, which is like old school Warner Brothers and MGM, and Turner Classic Movies was basically a free money printing machine because he's like, oh, well, this is all IP that you don't have to pay.
It's free.
Yeah, it's all fucking free. And so for a lot of the things that I think consumers were like, oh, wow, that's on TV a lot. People are getting money from that. It's further from the case. And like, I don't know, Andrew, like how would you describe to somebody, because I've heard from people who like talk about the strike who are like film adjacent people who like maybe do a lot of catering for stuff or like, you know, work in other departments.
Sure.
There's like, well, the writers, like they're just they get everything they want. These people are all rich. And I want to really reiterate that this is a job where people are barely they can't even put their kids through school, you know, when they're trying to. So how would you how would you describe what the lifestyle is of someone who is trying to just be a writer in the industry? And if is it just all champagne parties all day and you have no bills to pay?
Exactly. It's I mean, look, and this is also a today of it. Like, I think at the there was a time when at least the when network and cable was like equitable. It was like you worked a job and you had about a middle class existence. So it was just about where I would be, or maybe even a little nicer, depending on how well your show did, aka how well you did your job. Right. So yeah, just since I'm here, it was one of those things where I'll just do the long version of this, which is like at the beginning of the strike, I was like, you know, I'm like doing okay. You know, I work. And in the last, like, you know, 100 days, 104 days, like, I've really been seeing like, oh shit, I specifically was like screwed for doing kind of the same work. And so the example that is like very stark is the last show I worked on was That 90s Show, which is on Netflix. It's one of those like multicam streaming reboots.
No promo though.
Yeah, exactly. No, fuck them. Like
any promo though. Just letting you know, any promo.
No, I'm like truly going to tell you why. And the prior to that, I worked on a show called Mixed Dish, which was a spinoff of Blackish, which was on ABC. So just like the kind of like hard facts example. I mean, Mixed Dish was never like a huge hit. We got like a second season, but, you know, it wasn't killing it ratings wise. I'm very honored to have worked on the show. And it's I thought we did a great job and I met so many amazing people. However, you know, it wasn't like, you know, overwhelmingly crushing it. Whereas 90s Show, apparently, because one of the other things the MPTP refused to do is divulge their streaming numbers. But, you know, it was a huge hit. According to them, it was the number one streaming on Netflix for like several weeks.
Yeah,
just trust us. So by their metrics, a quote unquote huge hit. And look, I mean, I guess there's a possibility more residuals will come through. But sort of to date, I have made per episode somewhere on the order of 100 times more per episode of Mixed Dish that I have my name on than my episode of 90s Show.
100 times.
Yeah. And that is, again, marginal, like a solid show versus a, you know, a show that by their reckoning, like a humongous hit. So basically that's like what the royalty structure on streaming versus network is. It's literal pennies or more than pennies on the dollar. And so residuals is a thing that I think people, you know, feel a certain way about, right? Most people at their job don't get paid for the thing they make over time. However, so the reason residuals are, to our minds, a fair thing is we only get paid if the studio continues to resell our creative product, continues to make money from it.
Right.
So the reason, for instance, like when my episode of Mixed Dish replays overseas or plays on video on demand, I get a tiny percentage of that money that they make. Whereas there's no real equivalent, or sorry, there's an equivalent, but it's much lower on streaming.
Yeah.
You know, again,
one one hundredth
about, as far as I know. Like, I don't know, I guess, all the ins and outs, but it has been really stark. I'm like making no money for this hit. And, you know, you hear many stories. People just routinely, Cody Ziegler, who's been on the show before, a friend of mine, made a 3-figure check for his hit episode of She-Hulk, which again was one of the highest rated, according to them, highest rated things on Disney Plus. So, and the reason you need residuals is because that is sort of because we are not full-time employees. Like, we're not someone who like is hired by a studio or hired by a producer and just able to work all the time.
Right.
So the compromise is sort of like, in exchange for when we do stuff that does amazingly well, we are compensated and able to like participate in that well performing thing. So the other thing that is like a direct way that I was like, oh, this is a 1-to-1 and how I've been specifically screwed is I worked on That 90s Show, which is a reboot of That 70s Show. If anyone's ever watched both shows, they were created, you know, we have like our showrunner was like a That 70s Show writer. The creators and executive producers were writing and in the room with us. Like, It was exactly, it's the same fucking sets. Like, it's the exact same process of making that 90s show as making that 70s show, except for we had approximately half the writers.
Wow.
Which in a show like that makes it very difficult, because what you're doing is like pitching jokes. And at a certain point, it's just like a volume thing. Like, you know, there's only so many fresh takes and there's only so many resources that you can have to make the exact same product. So yeah, it was just one of those things where I was like, oh man, you know, that show was like very, very difficult to make. And I think like unnecessarily so because of the resources that we had writing wise, which is again a tiny fraction, like single digit percentages of the budget. And you know, and then also just my development as a writer suffered. Like I was often just like either in over my head, like having to run the joke room, for instance, which is like usually, you know, someone more senior than me would be doing that because we would have twice as many people. So working with like half as many people, often without enough, you know, and I don't really mean to say this as like a ding on the actual people running 90s show, but it was just like, you know, who the fuck knows? But I guess it's like, We were like slightly just like under resourced the whole time in a way that was like incredibly difficult for doing the exact same job. Again, it was exactly the same work as making 70s show. And people who wrote episodes of that 70s show, you know, conservatively, because it was on Fox, like high mid six figures, probably over the lifetime in residuals, maybe like it was a ton of money for doing the exact same work. So in multiple ways, like, analogous to old school like TV writers, even from like 5-6 years ago, I'm like really, and I kind of didn't realize how screwed I was until spending a bunch of time on the picket line talking to people, and I was like, oh right.
Yeah,
like I thought I was doing okay, and then I was like, oh, I've really been getting fucked for like apples to apples work, like literally the exact same thing, or in my, I would argue, more difficult.
All right, actually, before we keep going on this, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but
same old.
Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
And we're back. It sounds like there's an incentive for not even like acknowledging a hit show. And I know that's also like always been a traditional, like, you know, thing that people said about the entertainment industry, right? Like the first Indiana Jones movie, like, is still, like, according to the studio that made it, like, not profitable, you know, like shit,
sure,
like that,
right,
where
right.
It's like creative bookkeeping to keep people from participating. But it does feel like there is, like, we don't even know when a show is a hit anymore. And
yes,
like, it's just right. Like they dumped so much content, so
yeah,
many like shows on the, like, on their streaming networks without like even trying to promote when like one of them was a hit. It was just all, yeah, like invisible. And it's like all these things that supposedly millions and millions of people are watching and are entering, like, should be entering our, like, cultural, like, bloodstream. And, like, these are the ideas, yeah, that are, like, affecting the zeitgeist, and they're just, like, completely invisible. Do you think that's connected to the streamers just being so kind of guarded about letting their data,
yeah,
out?
Well, one is they might simply be, I'll say, you know, using creative statistics,
yeah,
about,
say, straight,
like,
up bullshitting.
Right.
Yeah.
The performance, like, of things.
Like, that's certainly a possibility. But the other thing is, yeah, has been, like, their model is, like, so driven by people who apparently don't like or watch TV or understand how culture works at all.
Sure.
Like, down,
yeah,
to the
Wall
binging.
Street, right?
Yeah, it's Wall Street and Silicon Valley's influence. Like, you can see that happening. Because it's not like there aren't things that can happen, right? Even like on the streamers, like a Squid Game, or like, you know, just whatever, like
jury duty.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
things can break through and make a cultural impact. But I think it is because these people, essentially what their business model is, and you can tell, sorry, this is all my own speculation, I should say, is like you watch them trying to feed this like concept of quote content, like you see it in like HBO, right, Max, like David Zaslav just thinks of everything as content. Like he's like House Hunters and Game of Thrones is equally,
yeah,
like
the same
equally
level,
a
right,
creative endeavor. Yeah, like that is like very important to their worldview. It's just like minutes to eyeballs and fill in tape, essentially. So that I think is also why like they don't. Like, they seem to have an interest in devaluing the business model. And I will just throw this out there. It if you look at the way Silicon Valley has done things to other industries, I think Uber is a great example, or like rideshares in general. Like, they just go in, operate at a loss in an attempt to destroy the industry and create some kind of monopoly, which is arguably what Netflix is doing. And then, you know, either jacking up the prices or just sort of leaving the industry to like fucking deal with the cratered pieces and society.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. So that it just seems like Netflix essentially. So the other upshot of all this is that like because like streamers play much fewer residuals off of like because we say so data. Netflix and Netflix, you know, or the streamers having like pioneered this practice of mini rooms, which is like, again, what I went through with 90s Show, like hiring much fewer people, asking them to do much more work and doing it for a shorter period of time. We like they're essentially just begging to be able to operate at a lower cost, which is like, hey, maybe you just don't get to if you're not smart enough to make money like from television,
yeah,
like America's greatest import or export, like the most powerful thing. Like other countries realize this. Like fucking China understands that it's important to have, like they obviously want to screw their workers too, but they at least understand it's important from a fucking, even if you're like a complete, like, you know, if you really don't care about this, like just from a geopolitical standpoint, like right. Great Britain gets to continue to be a world power, you know, decades edging on century, like after their fucking little empire like crumbles, because people, because the Beatles is soft power that right. resonates, you know. This, we still have like my like dumb family who were literally victimized by the British being like, oh, sad when Queen Elizabeth dies. Like, that's power. That's like right, fucking yeah. power. And the fact that we appear to be like willing to give that away. So what I should say is, when I say give that away, is if the studios get what they want, that will, within, you know, 5, 10 something years, be the end of like working as a creative in Hollywood being a middle class sustainable existence. Like, it simply will be not possible. There will not be any staff writers. Like, essentially, that will then become, if you are a low-level television writer, it's sort of the equivalent of an internship. Like, essentially, like, only rich kids will be able to do it.
Right.
And, like, that, it just is basically then becoming a writer in Hollywood, is what I know most about, is a lottery ticket. You know, some of you will be able to make it on merit, but also luck. Some of you will be able to just outlast because you could run at a deficit for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. Look, and it, by the way, is already like this, but it will make it worse. And if the like proposal to SAG goes through, that's like essentially trying to break the union from a pension perspective. If what they put on the table was there, like they would end background acting as a profession, and that would completely decimate, sorry, I should say all this is as I understand it. Mm. Adam Conover probably has the actual notes version of this. But like that just fucking ends acting as like a job. It ends acting as a job and turns it into a gig, which is just that's how we start to tell fewer interesting stories. Fewer new people will come through. We'll start to be doing the same thing over and over and over right. again. And we will start losing to creative people, creative countries. Like, it's just, it's very weird. No, it's not. But it is like sort of pathetic how like short term that all these folks,
the thinking is. Yeah.
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 Cause yeah, I mean, like for the longest time, we were always like, how the fuck is Netflix a company? Because all I would be like, they're just deficit spending and deficit spending yeah. and deficit spending. And I was always asking like other people I knew who were like at the executive of them, like, what is their, like, I remember 10 or maybe like 8 years ago asking, like, what the fuck is their plan exactly?
Yeah.
And someone was like, they're probably hoping something like an Apple or a Google will just buy them at first.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like the thought, and it won't matter how much they've spent or burned up, because that would be the end goal. But then also once Wall Street started rewarding that stock to say, oh, well, it's yeah. really not about the profits they're showing. It's about, look at their market share that they're devouring, and look at the potential. It's like Tesla, where it's like, don't look at like the facts and figures of the business, because it's yeah. dog shit. Think of like what this can do for the future. That's what you're buying into. And then once Netflix was like, oh, we just had a subscriber loss, Wall Street basically said, fuck all you guys for not yeah. being profitable. And then the reaction from the studios is, all right, well, now we got to cut shit. Now we got to do, people yeah. got to do less. We got to do more with less, which is yeah. a theme that many people across the country are familiar with, no matter yeah. what industry you're in. It's like, yeah. hey, do more for less.
Yeah.
And we find ourselves in this position now where we're completely, like in a way, inadvertently or very advertently, you're starting yeah. to see all of like the gains that were made in like equitable representation from like the kinds of creators that were getting shows and the kinds of people we saw being the faces on the screen. We're just regressing right back to the fucking status quo yeah. where it's like, I don't know, we don't have time to tell black stories or trans stories yeah. or Asian stories. We don't have time. Like, what's the new fucking IP we can just dust off and do? Another, they're going to do a spinoff of Nurse Jackie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck but are like, we doing?
Like, worse than the status quo, because it's the status quo, but also they don't pay people living wages.
Right.
Like, yeah, is the actual plan. Yeah, they like Wile E. Coyote themselves off a financial cliff. But the problem is they can bring all of us with them.
Right. And they're trying to do that.
Yeah, that is it appears to be the plan. And like, you know, I mean, it's just like this thing where I was like, again, watching how much like the same work is not being rewarded or being devalued. Oh, sorry. That was the other thing with the deficit spending thing is like they also didn't really do a good job with the money they spent.
No.
Like it's like because they just think, again, minutes of tape is the only metric that matters.
Yeah,
and yes. It's so bizarre how it like any fool could have told you that's not how culture works. Except right. for these bozos. Like,
yeah.
They misunderstand how culture works. It's also this thing that, so the other sticking point in this strike has been AI. And, like, I, you know, the fact that, like, I understand AI can do, you know, will start to very quickly approach the old thing, you know, perfect replicas of whatever the fuck existed in the past.
Yeah. Right.
But, like, I think, like, these people, like, seem to misunderstand that culture is novel,
right?
Like,
right,
they just do not get that, like, there is a need for something new,
right?
And like their little plagiarism machine, you know, it maybe can, you know, through dint of like random remixing, essentially, like come up with something that does yeah. appeal to a novel center of the culture's brains. But that's also because, like, some creative person picked that instance out of this pile of fucking 10,000 or 10 million. Like, yeah. It still required, like, a even, you know, so that's, like, every time anyone posts, like, AI art, it's like, oh, it's over for creatives. It's like, I don't, it you know, sucks. Far be it for me to defend the creativity of these AI fucking evangelists. But they're misunderstanding that they picked the instance that was like pleasing to some center of their brain and shared with everyone,
right?
That the AI doesn't know that this one's better than the other fucking 9 million versions it made.
Right.
It still requires like a human sense of novelty and joy and wonder and experience to like have this mean something. I don't know. Maybe I'm sure there's some like AI person that disagrees with me on this. But
the second
like,
that it puts out an actual flawless Seinfeld episode, then I think that we're still okay, you know. But
yeah,
it's still doing it. But
yeah.
Like the other thing,
even
is
that
like,
would be an old show. Like there are plenty of writers who could write a flawless Seinfeld episode right now. Like that's the thing that it misses is, and I agree that like it feels like they're already shading in this direction when you look at what they did with that spending, with all the money they spent, where it was like a lesser diminished like amount of production resources per show. And then you like look at all these streaming shows that are like they have these crazy high numbers, like this one article we'll link off to on the footnotes talks about the show The Night Agent being this huge like Netflix show, and they're talking to the showrunner who's like, yeah, but I'm like not being compensated like it's a hit Netflix show or a hit any show. And but like that show like doesn't really exist as far as like I it came and went, and like I wasn't aware. I had it confused with The Bodyguard, I think, and the guy who plays it is like looks similar to The Bodyguard, and
right.
But it like I watched, you know, 15 minutes of it, and it feels like it could have been generated by an AI that had ingested every procedural like up to like for the past 30 years. Like that.
Yeah.
It feels like, yes, AI is actually in line with what they think they're trying to do. It's just what they think they're trying to do is going to not make anything good, like good enough to actually like propel the entertainment and like the art that like drives culture forward into the future.
And they're just killing something that is innately human about like wanting to create and to be creative. Like, because the way these studios and executives look at the nature of creativity is like, it's the same way a senator would look at what they're going to read if they're trying to filibuster. It's like, man, just say shit. Just say words. Just, that's all you got to do.
It doesn't matter.
Just read from the phone book, and that's enough to tick the
it's
box.
Just as good.
Right. And think of how uninteresting what happens when you shift gears to, we'll just read from the phone book. The most entertaining thing might be when they don't know how to pronounce a certain name. And that's like the yeah. height of like fucking entertainment right. or whatever, because more and more it's just looked at, well, we just need to hear words and visuals be put out there for people to stare at. Creativity yeah. is and like a non-issue. And I think that's really a violent part like about it, is that we're taking that sort of ability for a human being to pursue something like that, to have an imagination and to be able to sustain their life with it. Just because yeah. it's not even possible.
But like even in your example, right? Like stumbling over a word is something only a fucking human could do.
Right.
Flawless, but then also right. it's like this, like they're the myths that got built around, like Netflix. The myth that they're built on is like, we had an algorithm that told us that people like Kevin Spacey and political drama, and therefore we greenlit House of Cards, and look, like the computer did that. No human could do that, which like ignores their like the things that don't work. It ignores the things that haven't worked that have been algorithm driven. Mm-hmm. And also, it's like this such a funny thing. It's like, you know what put Amazon streaming on the map? Fucking Transparent, which, by the way,
right.
not one computer at any point ever was like, do you know what we need now?
Right.
Like,
right.
you know, this story, Transparent. So like they're working from just like this law of tiny numbers. I mean, that was my other experience. Wow. This is maybe talking out of school, but I think this is a common enough experience, which is like, we had a moment in 90s show where they were insistent. Okay, I guess I just won't say exactly what the thing they were insisting on, but they had a note for our opening credit sequence that was basically like, the algorithm says you have to do this or else no one will watch it. And when I tell you it was an utterly, utterly, utterly inconsequential note from a creative perspective, it was just like technically going to be very difficult to do. And they're like, our data shows that this has to be this way. And like, having worked on the network side of entertainment before and worked with executives and watched our research department routinely lie to them, like essentially, or obfuscate with statistics. And having taken a little bit of statistics in my life, I'm like, you don't have enough data to know. Like right. you simply like this niggling tiny thing that doesn't really make any difference. Like you're insistent on it because your legitimately statistically insignificant data tells you one thing, but it doesn't. The reality is it doesn't matter. And the fact that you are killing multiple executives and a high-priced showrunner's day arguing about this is like flushing money down the toilet.
Yeah.
Because you worship an algorithm, but you also don't have the statistics knowledge to like actually say this is inconsequential. They had an inconsequential fight all day. Because I'm like, you haven't produced that many show opens before.
Right.
So you don't know, you just don't have a data set that tells you like whether this creative choice or this creative choice makes the most difference in this thing. And again, cannot stress enough, it did not make a difference.
Mm. Right.
Like,
yeah.
I bet that executive was like, see those hits, see those numbers? That's
yeah,
that's
it's because of the this.
Intro. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Andrew, such a pleasure having you to come on and tell
you.
Us what it's actually like working.
Thank you for
writer.
Letting me talk so long.
No, this was
appreciate
great.
Yeah, we're like, we want to, I mean, every time I see you post from the picket lines or like whatever you're observing your tweets, I'm always like, we got to have Andrew to talk about this. Yeah, also absolutely. Like, and also like, again, I think there's just such a misconception of what it means to work as a creative person in the industry, because most people just think they're just thinking of the exceptions. And
yes,
rather than that, there is such an occupation where you just are trying to match, like hone your craft of writing,
yes.
and it could render you an income that you could live off of. And
yeah.
and that's it. It's not yacht money. It can be yacht money, all, you know,
yeah.
God willing. But for the most part, it's like anything else. It's why the same thing we have people who want, they got to take side gigs now. It's like, but yeah. I thought you were yeah. writing on this show. Well, no, now I'm doing Uber. Now
yeah.
I'm doing
yeah.
this because it's yeah. actually not that kind of money.
I think if it helps, like, you know, just from the like actors, right? Like the criticism of like, look at these millionaires asking for more money. And it's like, it's actually the millionaires foregoing money to help everyone else. Like, far be it for me to, like, you know, kiss these rich people's asses. But in this instance,
the rock. Right.
They are, no, but truly, it's like, yeah, they are like giving, they're leaving money on the table to help other people. Like, from the SAG thing, I think I read the minimum per year you have to make in SAG to qualify for health insurance is somewhere like 25-30K, something like that.
Yeah.
And around 85% of their union do not make that from acting work. So this is not like rich people. This is people like trying to do a thing that they love that makes money. Hollywood is immensely profitable. So like the things that we do generate money, and we would just be able to like live off of that. And I would like to, like, that's the fucking thing. It's like, I don't know, like going back to work is going to be hard, but like we love TV and movies and whatever media is, you know, part of this, you know, high budget YouTube shows, whatever. I fucking right. love this shit. These people that we're negotiating against by their actions do not even seem to like or understand any of this stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is like they think that our love for this is their leverage to exploit us. And on some level it is and will be, but like, you know, we're at the ledge. And like at a certain point, this strike is like necessary because it's like there's no version where if we accept the deal they put on the table, there would even be an industry. So like they forced us to be, you know, in survival mode. So that's it. Like, good fucking luck.
And here we are surviving.
Amazing. Yeah. When Zaslav was like, I think a love of work will bring the strike to an end. He was like telling on himself that he's just like, these people seem to like have this weird thing.
It's like nerds really want their game back.
It's like so pathetic.
Is there where can people find you and follow you and all that good stuff?
Oh, you got to hit me up on Threads. No, I'm just
X.com.
Andrew T everywhere. If you can, we're still doing the Yo Is This Racist podcast. We actually started on the premium show doing my co-host Tawny Newsome and I. If you're a fan of Star Trek, she just had a pretty amazing episode where she did a live action crossover on Strange New Worlds. She's not promoting it. I'm just saying I really liked it. But we have been doing Picket Line, like diaries, essentially. Most of them start with me going, fuck, I'm running late. But yeah, just like literally like what the vibe is on the ground at every... We're going to try to hit all the picket lines by the time this is over. But we started that way late, but it's been actually fun. Yeah, so yeah, just Yo Is This Racist. If you could, if you find any of this remotely interesting, that would be cool.
Is there a work of media that you've been enjoying?
Yes. Besides all the movies I talked about, let's see. The tweet I was looking for that I couldn't find, so I'll just have to attribute this to Apocryphal, and I don't remember paraphrasing, but it's basically somewhere on Strike News, basically some version of, hey, CBS, Sheldon ain't getting no younger. It's crazy that CBS and the old network, not like old network, but legacy TV is like, why are you fucking tanking your fall season just to support Netflix? I don't know. Right. That's a different issue. But let's see, Brian Jordan Alvarez, but Brian Jor Alvarez on Twitter wrote, listen, we cannot kill this fucking pig. There's a spider nearby who keeps writing things in her web and they seem to be friends, which made me laugh this morning. So that'll be my media.
There you go. Miles, where can people find you? Is there a work of media you've been enjoying?
Find me on whatever you got them, at symbols, at Miles of Gray. Also, you know, if you want to hear NBA talk, check out Jack and I on Miles and Jack out Matt Boosties. Check out my new true crime joint, The Good Thief, where we talk about the Greek Robin Hood, and also 420 Day Fiance. Some media I'm liking. I thought I saw something over the weekend that I was fucking with. Nah. Forgot it. All right. Forgot about it already. Go. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Just learn yourself. Learn yourself, folks.
There you go. You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien and on Threads at @Jack_O_Brien. I've checked it in the past week, I swear to God. Work media I've been enjoying. At Internet Hippo tweeted, every American child has a Boston accent until they're about 6 years old. Science cannot explain this. Facts. You can can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do we think people might enjoy?
Oh, I think you're going to enjoy this track. This is from Surprise Chef. Gone out on a track from Surprise Chef before. But this is another track called Spiky Boy, S-P-I-K-Y-B-O-I. And it's just like good instrumental, you know, just relaxing. Get your week started, light head nod. I will turn up the volume a little bit towards the end of the week and we'll probably go out on some wild ass drum and bass or some shit like that. But to start, Spiky Boy by Surprise Chef.
All right. Well, you can find that in the footnotes. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for us this morning. Back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we'll talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.